Welcome back. Welcome back. Segment number two here on the scoreboard, 844 Studio 4. That's 844-788-3464. Get you on the program. Anything you'd like to talk about. We're going to get into the world of college basketball now because, man, it was a weekend. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, today, which is Monday, basketball games. Yesterday, we gave out the women's national championship. Congratulations to South Carolina as they complete their perfect season under head coach Dawn Staley there. And perfection, there's really not much else to say about it. Now, it wasn't the first time that's ever happened, so there's nothing crazy special about that. But it is redemption for South Carolina, as remember last year, they went into the tournament undefeated as well. Then they ran into Iowa, and we know how the story goes from there. Iowa wins, loses to LSU in the championship, and now here they are rematching in the national championship game. And Iowa put up a fight. They did. They put up a really good fight in that game, but there's really not much you can do sometimes when the other team has so much firepower. And 87-75 is the final in that game. I'll tell you what. This game, there was nothing too special about it. There were, you know, questionable calls. There were a couple of travel calls that I was like, number one, they don't call that in the NBA, but number two, by the book, yeah, it's a travel. Like, what are you going to do? Get mad because they're finally starting to officiate correctly? And that's the point I want to make as we look back. On Friday, we talked about the semifinal, the final four games, UConn versus Iowa in the women's bracket. And at the end of the game, UConn down one, had a chance to take the lead, but an offensive foul for a moving screen was called. Now, I get it. Number one, I want to put it out there. I understand the frustration with a referee influencing the end of the game. The only thing that's different about when we normally talk about a referee influence in the game is this is one where the referee actually got it correct. And I know we're going to be mad about that because you look at it and you say, man, it was barely a moving screen. Well, it was a moving screen. You can't do that. Do I think it would have been called that with 7 minutes to go in the second quarter? No, I don't think that. Which goes to another point of why are we officiating the beginning of the game different than the end of the game? It should be the same all the way through. But number one, with it being the right call, you just have to look at that and say, we would be talking about it more and it would still be a story today, the day after the national championship in the women's league. The Final Four being decided on a non-call would still be talked about today because the story would be, I cannot believe that referee missed that call and sent UConn to the final championship game. That's what we'd be talking about today. Whether they won or lost, and if they lost to South Carolina, oh, what could have been with Iowa and South Carolina? So you can't get mad at everything. That was the right call. And yeah, it stinks. We kind of got robbed of a good finish. That was a great game. But it's the right call. And I will stand by it 100% of the time. We would be even more upset at, like, generally, no matter if it's men's, women's, pros, high school, college, doesn't matter. We would be significantly more upset with the officiating if they missed a call rather than call something that should have been called but wasn't super egregious. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't crazy. She did step out a little bit to try and make the screen, and it's a moving screen, but it wasn't crazy. Like, it's still the right call. And I will stand by that. And I think that they made a good decision. That referee made a good call to blow the whistle and say, no, that's an offensive foul. We're going back the other way. Look, the players knew right away. And that's, for something like that, that's what I look to. Because we don't know. We think we know. But we don't know how they're going to call it. Obviously, the players for Iowa knew something. They were looking for the call right away. And it came. So, I have no problem with that. And, you know, congratulations to South Carolina, the perfect season. I still don't think they're the storyline here. The story is still Caitlin Clark. Is she the greatest of all time? She never won a national championship. It's a team sport. Stop making championships your metric. It's a terrible metric to use. Not every great player is going to win a championship. Happens all the time. Most players aren't going to win a championship. But for some reason, we look at them differently. It's a team sport. The players out there can only play with who they have in front of them. They're not the ones making the calls. So anyway, I still think Caitlin Clark, you know, one of the greatest players of all time in women's basketball, college or pro. She's up there now. So we move on to tonight. And tonight, the men are on center stage. UConn, Purdue, battle of one seeds. The story here is, how does Purdue stop UConn? How does anybody stop UConn? Because honestly, I don't know. I think UConn is going to win this game. But there's a caveat to that because there is a couple of things that can happen. Number one, if UConn's just off. And there's nothing that Purdue can do to either make sure that they are having a good day or a bad day shooting the ball. All they can do is defend the way that they know how. The other thing is, and it's the biggest difference maker that there is in college basketball, and that is Zach Edey. If he can have a game like he did a couple of weeks ago where he gets 40 points, there is a chance for Purdue. Now, I know they're the underdog, and the betting line has UConn as the 6.5-point favorite. So there's a chance. 6.5 points, that's just over two possessions in basketball. Two threes and a two, right? That gets you over that. Or two threes and a free throw. However you want to dice it up. Zach Edey can be that difference maker. I'm not going to say he's going to hit a three-pointer, no. But if he can just stand under the basket, be taller than everyone, scoop up some rebounds, get 40 points, you know, I make it sound like it's easy. It's not going to be easy. But that is how Purdue wins this game. In the semifinal game for Purdue against South Carolina, Zach Edey scored, I believe it was 18 consecutive points for Purdue. And it was during that run where Purdue started to really separate from NC State. Once they figured out they couldn't stop Edey, they just kept figuring out a way to get him the ball. And they grew the lead until finally they couldn't do it anymore. So that's the path to victory tonight for Purdue. All eyes are going to be on it. It's a solo game tonight. There's really not much else on in terms of national attention. Now, if you're interested in the more specific sports like baseball, like basketball, there's pro baseball, basketball on. There's college baseball even. But all eyes nationally are going to be on the men's basketball championship. 9:30 is when this game will be tipping off, right around 9:30 or so. So this is not uncommon. I feel like the national championship game has been a late tip game for quite some time. It's a Monday game. We know why they put it on a Monday. They put it on a Monday so that everybody's eyes are going to be on it. Now, the women's basketball final being on a Sunday at 3 o'clock, That's one thing, you know, you're going to want to tune in, and people did tune into it. We can talk about the ratings for that game tomorrow when we also talk about the ratings for the men's game, because I'm going to be very interested to see what they pull in. But the game being on a Monday, nobody else is going to have their eyes on anything. So if there's something that you're looking to watch tonight, men's basketball championship. It's right there for you, Purdue and UConn. We do have some hockey going on tonight. The Carolina Hurricanes do not play until tomorrow. I'll tell you a little bit about the season, how their weekend went, and what the outlook is going into the playoffs. Coming up on our halfway point here on the scoreboard today, 844 Studio 4. That's 844-788-3464. Get you here on the program, part of the show, anything you want to talk about, just call me up. We'll chat. Don't go anywhere. We're back after this.
Talk sports with Joe Berg. Call 844-STUDIO-4. It's the scoreboard on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC.
All right, everyone, halfway through today on the scoreboard on this Monday. 844 Studio 4. It'll get you up here into the studio, part of the program, anything on your mind at all. Doesn't matter to me. We'll chat about it. Just got to call me up. The NHL season is wacky this year, and I think wacky is probably the only appropriate term for it. There are currently 8 teams in the NHL that have over 100 points. The New York Rangers, the Dallas Stars, the Boston Bruins, Carolina Hurricanes, Vancouver Canucks, Colorado Avalanche, Florida Panthers, and Winnipeg Jets all have over 100 points, and with plenty of games to go in the season. The Edmonton Oilers have 99. The Toronto Maple Leafs have 97. There's going to be at least 10 teams in the NHL this year that are going to have a 100-point season. I can't tell you the last time that happened. I really can't, and I can't find that information anywhere. So maybe people who are a little smarter than me might know the answer to that. But right now we have only a few games left to go in the season. 4 games, to be exact, for the Carolina Hurricanes. And I told you they're struggling right now. Not that they're struggling, it's that the team in front of them, the New York Rangers, will not lose. I don't know what it is, but the Rangers aren't losing. And they keep going down early, and they come back and win. And they go down early, and then they come back and win. So Carolina has been unable to gain any type of ground in the Metropolitan Division. Right now, with those 4 games to go, 4 games, total of 8 points available. So you can only get 8 points for the remainder of the year. Right now, the Hurricanes are 5 points behind the Rangers. It would take a monumental collapse for the Rangers not to win the Metropolitan. And not only that, while we're fighting for the top of the Metropolitan, the Boston Bruins are sitting at 107 points, 3 behind the Rangers, 2 in front of Carolina. That is going to matter just in case all 3 of these teams, somehow 2 of them match up. Whoever's got the most points is going to have the home ice advantage. So the Rangers right now throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs would have home ice advantage. And as they currently sit as the best team in the National Hockey League, they would get the home ice in the Stanley Cup Finals. Now, I don't know if Carolina would be able to catch up to the Rangers pass the Rangers and become the President's Trophy winners. That seems like a monumental task, given how many teams are in front of them in the standings. I just mentioned one in the Boston Bruins. You also have the Dallas Stars in front of them. It just doesn't seem plausible. But it is possible that Carolina wins out, the Rangers stutter, and Boston loses a game or two, giving at least Eastern Conference home ice advantage to the Carolina Hurricanes. Do I think all of this is going to happen? Long story short, no. There's not enough time. The New York Rangers are too hot. The Carolina Hurricanes cannot gain points if the Rangers keep winning. So if the season ended right now, today, here's how it would shake down. The Carolina Hurricanes would be hosting the New York Islanders in round number one of the playoffs. The New York Rangers would be hosting the Detroit Red Wings. If the Rangers and Hurricanes win, they would meet each other in round number two, home ice going to the New York Rangers in that one. There's still a lot of maneuvering that needs to be done. Not only do the Islanders have 85 points, but right behind them, at least in the Metro standings, because there's really only two spots remaining. The second wild card is locked up. The third Atlantic spot is now locked up. So you have the third place team in the Metropolitan Division and the second wild card still up for grabs. Right now, the Islanders have that wild card spot. Have the division spot, and the Red Wings have the wild card. The Red Wings are in the Atlantic. They can't make anything happen in the Metro. But behind the Red Wings at 83 points, 2 points behind the Islanders, are the Penguins, the Capitals, and the Philadelphia Flyers. Those three teams are eligible for either the third in the Metro or second in the wild card. The importance of this is whoever finishes third in that Metropolitan Division, as long as Carolina stays where they are and finishes second in the Metro, two and three play each other. And then the Rangers, being that they have the best record or the most amount of points in the East, they would play the number two wild card team, that being the Detroit Red Wings right now. But Pittsburgh, Washington, and Philadelphia all still have a chance. To an extent, the New Jersey Devils do. To an even less extent, the Buffalo Sabres still have a chance. They're not mathematically eliminated, but it would take some type of collapse, like I said, for the teams in front of them. The problem is there's just too much help that those two teams need. The Devils need the Flyers, Capitals, Penguins, Red Wings, and Islanders all to stink for the next four games while they win. Is it going to happen? Probably not. Can it happen? I've seen crazier things. We've seen really insane things happen in sports before. I mean, NC State was just in the Final Four. Not to pick on anyone, I'm just saying crazy things happen. They were an 11 seed. So as we dwindle down to the end of the season here, the Hurricanes' next game will be tomorrow, where they will be taking on the Boston Bruins. That game will be on the road, so they'll be traveling up the East Coast to go play those Bruins, while the New York Rangers don't have to travel far. They just got to go to the other New York team in the city area, at least, the Islanders, out in Long Island, as they play the New York Islanders there. And like I said, the Islanders are one of those teams that are fighting for that final spot, so yeah, it's an important game for the Rangers and the Islanders, but also it's an important game that Carolina really has no control over. If the Islanders win, they really put themselves in a good spot to get that third place in the Metropolitan. But if they lose, it's going to be back to wide open. Philadelphia is going to be in action. Washington's going to be in action. Detroit's going to be in action. Pittsburgh plays tonight. So there's still a lot of shuffling that needs to unfold before we see who these matchups are going to be. The West is a little bit more defined. The East, at least for those final couple of spots, is up for grabs. The only thing that we absolutely know 100% for certain, and this isn't even 100% for certain, this is like 90%, is that the Panthers are going to play the Leafs and the Bruins are going to play the Lightning. But that's not even completely true. Anyway, coming to our final break of the day. When we return, we are going to get into NASCAR. Sunday, we were racing at the Paperclip Martinsville in Virginia. We'll talk about that race and recap everything you need to know from the weekend. Don't go anywhere. One segment to go here on the Scoreboard on this Monday. We'll be back after this.
This guy knows his sports, right? There's more of the Scoreboard with Joe Berg on the way on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Now more of the Scoreboard with Joe Berg on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Final segment here on the Scoreboard, 844 Studio 4. You'll be part of the program, chat about whatever you want. Ask me a question, yell at me, I don't care. It's sports. People are passionate. I get it. You know what people are passionate about? That is NASCAR racing. We had a middle-of-the-road type Martinsville race on Sunday. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it was a great race, but I'm also not going to say that it was a horrible race, because I don't believe that it was absolutely terrible. There have been quite a few terrible Martinsville races. It's just that, well, nothing happened in this one. If you were listening, you were able to catch that race right here on WSIC. MRN was on the call. Here is your 1 minute Martinsville race recap.
Buckle up. It is time to go here. The Martinsville Speedway, the Cookout 400, the NASCAR Cup Series. Kyle Larson picks up the stage win, his fourth of the season.
Denny Hamlin moves him up the racetrack at the entrance to turn number one, and they're going to go side by side for the lead. Hamlin on the inside, Logano on the outside.
Denny Hamlin will win stage number two, his second stage win of the season.
William Byron powers underneath Daniel Suarez. He'll take control of the lead as they race down the backstretch. Hot in his tire tracks now is Hendrick Motorsports teammate Chase Elliott. Oh, up into the wall goes Nemechek. John Hunter Nemechek blew the right front tire. He's in the fence in turn number three. And that sound you just heard was William Byron's head beating against the steering wheel.
Checkered flag is waving. William Byron picks up his third win of the season. Byron wins the Cookout 400 at Martinsville Speedway.
William Byron picking up his third win of the season. He dominated, not in the way that you expect a dominating car to dominate. He was in the top five for the most of the race. And then those green flag pit stops in the final stage took place, and you never really saw him again. He checked out from the field, pitting early, got those tires on the car, and was able to make up the gap that he had on the racetrack with fresh tires. Once he got out front, he was able to get past the lap traffic smoother than anybody else on the track. So William Byron picking up his third win of the year. A couple of dueling wins, if you will. We had Denny Hamlin at Bristol, William Byron at Circuit of the Americas, Denny Hamlin at Richmond, and then William Byron here at Martinsville. Next week, we go to Texas. And then the week after that is Talladega, one of the most anticipated races of the year always. And then, in my opinion, the bulk of the season starts. We got a lot of variety in terms of what tracks we go to. We have the Coke 600 in there, the All-Star race up at North Wilkesboro. We're going to turn right a little bit. We're going to go short track racing, mile and a half racing. There is a lot of variety in the mid part of the season, pretty much all the way up until, the end of the season gets a little bit more, this is what we've done traditionally, kind of like what the beginning of the season is, with a couple of exceptions. You know, Atlanta is a completely new track. We've had that West Coast swing for quite a while now. It just used to be three tracks. Now Auto Club is no longer on the schedule. But next week we go to Texas, a mile and a half track, and we'll see what happens. You know, it's not a fan favorite track. We saw over the weekend, if you were paying attention to social media, Denny Hamlin making fun of Marcus Smith for his botched repaves. Texas being one of those tracks that they repaved it, and now nobody can do anything there. It's just kind of a parade. Remember when they had the All-Star race at Texas? Boy, was that one of the worst All-Star races of all time. Now, the interesting part of this Martinsville weekend, actually, it wasn't the Cup Series. It was the embarrassing moments of the lower-level series. The trucks have been embarrassing ever since we got to Phoenix. It seems to me like nobody has any respect out there, and nobody knows how to drive. I tuned into the truck race for a little while on Friday. I did. I wanted to see what was going on. Boy, am I upset that I did, because we couldn't make 10 laps around a half-mile track. That's 5 miles, guys. We can't go 5 miles without wrecking? Well, apparently they couldn't. At least that's how it felt. And then Saturday, man, the end of that race, you know, green-white checkers at Martinsville. They're bumper cars. There's no racing. It's just survive. And, you know, for the cup race, it probably would have been a wild green-white checkered had we not had first, second, and third being teammates. Hendrick Motorsports, they're not going to push the issue on each other. Yeah, they're going to race for the lead, and you saw it right there with Chase Elliott giving a bump to William Byron. It wasn't an aggressive bump. It was a normal bump that you're going to give somebody to say, hey, I'm behind you, but he didn't wreck him. So, and Byron talked about that in his post-race interview, saying, yeah, I expected that. Just glad he didn't give me no chance, which is something that we've heard a lot from drivers, is he didn't even give me a chance. He just moved me out of the way. You're not going to see that with teammates. Restarts weren't a problem in the Xfinity Series. I guess they finally decided they were going to police it, but in the Cup Series, we had so few restarts, it really didn't matter. And we didn't have to worry about the final restart because, like I said, top three were teammates. And for the first time ever at Martinsville, a team finished 1-2-3. That being Hendrick Motorsports with William Byron in the 24 car grabbing the win, Kyle Larson finishing second, and Chase Elliott finishing third. Chase Elliott finally starting to put a few good results together, as it's been a really tough couple of years from him ever since that championship. Ever since the curse of the no, I touched back up Jackman, which still boggles my mind. NASCAR continues to make it up as they go along. But that's from 2 years ago. We're not going to talk about that. It's not a big deal at this point. So just a reminder for you, tonight we have the national championship, Purdue taking on UConn. Make sure you tune into that one. Also, during the week, we are going to be looking heavy into the NHL, seeing what's going on around the league, because we are right there for playoffs. Positioning for those playoff matchups are happening, especially in the East. And I want to somehow find out what the most amount of 100-point teams is. I can't seem to find that stat specifically. Also, coming up this weekend, the Masters. Yes, golf, prominent, back on the main stage with the Masters. And Tiger Woods expected to compete. Now, I don't know if we are going to see a miracle repeat of 2019, where somehow for the first time in 11 years, he won a championship there and got another Masters win. I don't know if we're going to see that, but it will be nice to see if he can actually make it through the weekend, because, man, that's a lot of walking. You don't really think about it all that much. Final couple of minutes here today on the show, so we're going to turn our attention to this day in sports history. Today, 1968, Major League Baseball decided to postpone the opening day because of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. They weren't able to start the season. There was too much going on in the world. They had to push back the start of that. Also, another baseball one. We're going to have a lot of baseball these days coming up. On this day in 1979, Hammerin' Hank Aaron hit his 715th career home run off of who? Anybody know? We can make that a trivia question one day. Al Downing for the LA Dodgers, breaking Babe Ruth's record, and that took place in Atlanta. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in today. Happy Monday to you. I hope everybody enjoyed the eclipse. It wasn't, in my opinion, it wasn't as good as, what was it, 2017 when we had the eclipse? It came right over South Carolina, and I think it was a little bit closer. I didn't hear any of the nighttime chirping birds that you do, but it's also not the middle of summer, so I don't even know if those bugs are out yet. Anyway, we'll see you again in 2045 for the next eclipse. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Watch that championship game. We'll be talking about it tomorrow. Until then, have a good night, everyone.
Serving you better than ever before. 105.9 100.7 WSIC, Statesville, Morrisville, North Charlotte.